Ita Buziashvili is an expert on influence operations, foreign interference, social media manipulation, and digital authoritarianism. These, of course, are themes that are going to be especially relevant today as we discuss the events unfolding in Georgia. Ita also currently works as a research associate at the Atlantic Council. Welcome to Silicon Curtain. Please like, subscribe, and definitely comment on all of our videos. That will help you to discover more great speakers that we feature on the channel. Please also check out the validated Ukrainian charities that appear in the description of the video. It's incredibly important to help Ukraine remain resilient in the face of Russian aggression. I'm guessing we're going to need to start putting potentially some links to Georgian civil society organizations in there as well too, because it's quite clear that Georgia also needs to remain resilient. But is this under Russian pressure or not? Well, this is a topic we're going to be discussing today. Welcome to the channel.
Pleasure to be joining you, Jonathan.
Well, let's start with this question about whether what we're seeing is a local authoritarian slide with the Dream Party, or can we see traces of Russian pressure, Russian influence, and maybe even some kind of direction from the Kremlin in terms of the events unfolding and, of course, the infamous foreign agents law.
The Russian-style foreign agents law basically encapsulates the broader ambition of the ruling Georgian Dream Party. And these ambitions are to bring Georgia more closer to Moscow and to cement the country on that orbit, as well as to, of course, to abandon the current country's Euro-Atlantic aspirations. And frankly, this is the first time in Georgia's history when the governing ruling party has officially declared a shift in the nation's Euro-Atlantic foreign policy alignment. Two things are very important to understand. First, that the big majority of Georgians, up to 80%, want to see their country joining European Union, and more than 70% of Georgians want to see their country to join NATO. On the other hand, there is an article in your Georgian Constitution, Article 79, which says that all the constitutional bodies, basically the government agencies, should ensure that Georgia joins your Atlantic family. So this is the current situation in terms of the will of Georgians and what should the Georgia's official foreign policy be. Despite the increasing scale of protests and intensity of the protests in comparison to last year, because it's not the first time the Georgian Dream tries to push this law, the ruling party continues to basically do so amid violent suppress of the protests. To understand the broader context, we should go back to 2012, when ruling Georgian Dream Party basically won the elections. Back then, the party tried to camouflage itself as pro-Western, pro-democratic party, basically trying to ensure the wider Georgian society that the chosen foreign policy will be continued. And then in their first term, it was not that much evident to many people that something was wrong with their actions, because on the one hand, we had statements which were reaffirming many times Georgia's Euro-Atlantic aspirations, and on the other, we had actions which did not really align with the statements. Then in the second term, more things became clear, especially after Russia's reinvasion of Ukraine in February 2022. This marks a period when the high officials of Georgian Dream and the government basically opened all their cards and started to attack the West openly and started to attack Ukraine openly. There were many, and I guess we will have time to elaborate all the on the narratives and information operations, but basically what we saw following the reinvasion of Ukraine was that the blame of the West, that the West is to blame for Russia's war in Ukraine, and that the Georgian Dream Party was trying to prevent the second invasion of Russia in Georgia. I should highlight that the oligarch Vidzina Ivanishvili, the person and the leader who is standing behind the party, he made his fortune in Russia back in 90s. We're talking about officially $7 billion, but these are just official numbers. And we're talking about a person who made his fortune in Russia, and then he came back to Georgia. In addition to his past, like business making in Russia, there were many reports, starting from Transparency International, continued with local Georgian investigative journalists, exposing his Russia links with businessmen and with various actors. So, of course, this strengthens the assessment of many in Georgia that there are some Russian links behind of what's happening in the country. And in addition, I should highlight that amid the criticism, the way that the large wave of the criticism coming from the US and the EU, Russia was the only actor who was supporting this bill and calling on international society to not interfere in Georgia's domestic relations affairs.
And of course, the big question is, where does it lead? Because the government's democratically elected, it's won several mandates. But the leader of the opposition was badly beaten, I believe, last week. And as you say, there are increasing signs of authoritarianism. Do people have a general sense or even a fear of where this is going? Because one of the propaganda narratives, of course, that came up in Ukraine is that Yanukovych was democratically elected. This is a coup against democratic government, etc. But when that government reneges upon its mandate, when it takes a policy, it was essentially a core part of the reason it was voted in, and then is seen to be reversing that. You could make the argument that they are, no longer really fulfilling the people's will. But it's a very difficult question, isn't it? Because propaganda makes huge use of this idea that, and they did this in Ukraine as well, that this is a coup against a democratically elected government. It's a color revolution. We know the kind of narratives. What do people feel about this? And then we'll come on to the second part of the question. Do we see this propaganda starting to emerge?
Sure, it's a very important question for the Georgian context because we've been observing years-long influence and propaganda efforts, not only from Georgian Dream side, but also directly the actors directly affiliated with the Kremlin as well as the Kremlin officials. And their aim was to prepare the context for this moment. I mentioned Russia's reinvasion in Ukraine and why it was very important for Georgian context. Starting from that period, one of the main disinformation narratives that emerged in Georgia was that the West, as well as Ukraine, were working together or maybe separately to drag Georgia into war with Russia. This narrative was pushed by anonymous social media accounts into Georgian information space on Facebook, on Telegram, etc. But more importantly, this narrative was pushed by the high-level officials of the Georgian Dream Party. In 2022, there happened a major shift in Georgia's information space. If before those were the openly pro-Kremlin political parties, pro-Kremlin far-right groups, or individuals who were attacking the West openly and blaming that the West wanted the war in Georgia, what happened in 2022 was that the Georgian Dream basically took this role from the openly pro-Russian parties, and they became the major actors pushing all the Kremlin disinformation narratives into Georgian information space. So we saw emergence of the narrative that the West was trying to drag Georgia into war. And this is a very important narrative because Georgian society, of course, remembers the trauma of 2008 war when Russia invaded Georgia. And of course, nobody wants to see another war in the country. And then, and of course, they are trying, that the ruling party is trying to capitalize on the fear of Georgian society that if we do not appease Russia, if you are going towards the West, this will mean another war in Georgia, same to Ukraine. So concurrently to this narrative, there emerged, not emerged, but re-emerged another narrative, which claimed that the West, as well as the Western-funded NGOs in Georgia, are trying to organize the violent overthrow of the government, akin Euromaidan in Ukraine. This narrative is not new in Georgia. Every attempt of pro-democracy demonstration in Georgia, basically every demonstration which was anti-government or the government did not really like, everything has was camouflaged as a revolution attempt by them. And the aim is very basically very clear, to delegitimize every democratic movement and every fair critics of the government. This narrative not only was pushed by far-right groups and other pro-Russian actors, but State Security Service of Georgia back in September 2023 brought this narrative to another level when they officially blamed the USAID for organizing for financing the organization of violent overthrow of the government. So I really want to highlight the scale of the influence efforts and information operations targeted at Georgian society. There are social media accounts which are pushing these narratives. There are Kremlin statements coming out of Peskov, Lavrov, etc. There are statements from Georgian governments. And then there are, I don't know, the websites and other affiliated actors, basically all of this machine trying to tell Georgians that if there happens in October parliamentary elections that opposition wins and the ruling Georgian party loses and people come to protest, this will be all illegal and illegitimate. So they are basically preparing all this ground to declare every protest during October parliamentary elections as an illegitimate. And last but not least, I mentioned far-right groups, and maybe we can elaborate on them later in our talk, but they used to play a very important role in the in government's efforts to bring Georgia to distance Georgia from the West. And one of those far-right groups, Alt-Info, they created anti-Euromaidan movement, basically announcing the crackdown on of any protests if they happen in October during parliamentary elections. So basically all the stage is set for more violence during election period in Georgia.
And we've seen some of that violence already unfolding. As I mentioned, the leader of the opposition has been beaten quite severely, which I think be interesting to hear your opinion. But that would be a shock, I'm sure, to Georgian society. We've also seen undercover thugs, people not necessarily in police uniforms, on a small scale so far, but inflicting extreme violence against protesters. Now, if this unfolds using the typical Kremlin playbook that we saw in Kyiv, then we would expect this violence to actually increase significantly. Do you think that will happen? And what is the risk for the Georgia Dream Party in terms of, losing its a mandate with the people if it resorts to extreme violence?
I believe that what we're seeing currently is that ruling Georgian Dream Party is making clear to Georgians as well as the Western partners that they are all in, that basically they are not going to back, and they will pass this law no matter domestic or external pressure. This was one of the elements, or this was basically one of the main pillars in oligarch Bidzina Ivanishvili's speech a couple of days ago when he addressed the nation and basically said that he mentioned Ukraine's former pro-Russian president Yanukovych saying that he is not Yanukovych, and the way that Ukrainians succeeded in Ukraine back then in defending their European future, this will not happen in Georgia. This was one of his main messages in his speech. So basically, we know that the intention is to push this law as well as implement all the subsequent authoritarian style crackdown. He basically announced the Soviet style crackdown on dissent. He mentioned that after the elections, there will be moral and legal consequences for collective, basically people who are against Georgian Dream and critical voices. So we know that the intentions are serious, and we know that the Georgian Dream is not going to back. But what we know and what we have seen during all these days, it's basically the third week that the protests are not stopping in Georgia, is that the Georgian people are also firm in their statement that they are not going to back either, and they are going to defend democracy and their European future at any costs. So to answer your question, it means that there are more risks that the situation will escalate, and we will see more violence coming out of law enforcement agencies. But you mentioned a very important thing. People, men in black uniforms and balaclavas without no identification mark and without no affiliation to law enforcement agencies, beating Georgian protesters, students, and we're talking about students and children. And there are numerous footages of these incidents online, which went viral. So it means that we can also do another parallel with Yanukovych when he used tetushkis, basically the term coined in Ukraine, meaning all these men in black who are agent provocateurs and who are trying to beat people and instigate some fights in order to lead to further arrests. So if we saw the tear gas deployed, if we saw the water cannon, rubber bullets, etc., we are also seeing tetushkis deployed. So this means that the step by step, the government and the ruling party basically are escalating, and they will be escalating more if the protests continue.
And his speech was interesting, wasn't it? Because it seemed to be extremely paranoid. It's not in line with the majority of how I think Georgians perceive their society and perceive the current situation. Is this the clearest indicator of how he's aligning and some of his mentality? Because I think previously there's been a certain amount of that has not really been apparent, or it's been kind of hidden. So why now? Why make such a blatant speech now? Has he misread the mood, or are there other reasons behind it?
I think Ivanishvili mentioned the answer to this question in his own speech. He basically said that Georgian Dream needs to pass this Russian-style law now, so that there is 3 months or 4 months before election. So their intent is to exhaust civil society, media, NGOs, etc., so that they are de-resourced right now, and they do not have all the resources to defend elections later. So this point was very clearly done by Ivanishvili in his speech. He also basically announced and declared the West as an external enemy and Georgian civil society as internal, saying that they will be faced by all these repressions, not only during the attempt to defend elections, but of course before as well. So I would say that the target is clear: to exhaust civil society and to start announced repressions over the summer. And also it's the summer seems to be very useful period for many authoritarian rulers. It's a season when they are invading other countries. It's a season when they are introducing various repressive laws because people are oriented on vacations. And I guess that this is another reason he initially decided to push this law right now. I guess that Georgian civil society will be faced with two options. Either they collaborate and stay silent, or they will have to leave the country. And if they will not leave the country, if they do not leave the country, they will be faced with administrative and criminal offenses, as we have seen in many authoritarian countries, in a well-tested and well-played playbook.
And the strength of the civil society, because of course, Maidan or the Revolution of Dignity could only have happened because of the relative sort of decentralization that had happened over the preceding years. That decentralization is not something I understand that really is part of the Georgian government administration. And whereas Ukrainian civil society got far stronger after Maidan, it already had a kind of threshold strength. So how would you compare civil society strength and self-organization in Georgia to Ukraine? And also this question of NGOs and civil society groupings, many of them do get their money from outside the country, because of course, the understanding is that there's not that much money in the country to be able to fund this. Does anyone see NGOs as being a sort of undue or foreign influence or something negative in Georgian society? Or are they more typically seen as positive? Just in a sense of how, whether this government law is sort of out of line with the majority thinking or not.
I'll start with the second question. I really want to highlight that all the donors who are represent the majority of the donors who are represented in Georgia, starting from USAID, NED, or European donors, they are not only financing the Georgian civil society, but they are also financing the government activities. And this is basically very ironical from the government to claim that those who are receiving the funds from the outside, of course, the West, are basically the enemies of the country. I would say that all the NGOs are doing, and we're talking about, like, I don't know, big election watchdogs, the NGOs who are exposing corruptions. We're talking about those ones who are exposing the wrongdoings. During all these years, of course, the NGOs have been not only paying the taxes, but providing the open declarations of how and where the funding coming from the donors were spent in Georgia. So of course this is not the case. Again, I would say that the majority of the NGOs are perceived in a positive way because of their work of defending human rights, promoting democracy. And I would say that all these years, the narratives pushed by the government attempted to discredit these NGOs. In our work, we have covered multiple instances when, for example, the government-affiliated Facebook network, and this affiliation was made clearly by Facebook itself, Meta, in their official statements. They have been running covert networks which were pushing narratives, undermining NGOs and civil society, and basically trying to discredit them. In addition to Georgian government's efforts to discredit these NGOs, we have also seen the similar narratives coming out of the Kremlin officials themselves. So despite all these efforts of first targeting NGOs and civil society, and second, all these basically information operations, we're still seeing that the protests are happening and that all these propaganda efforts did not really work when it comes to broader aim of Georgia becoming European family member. I want to highlight that in comparison to the last year protests and also the protests that have been happening throughout these years, there is a very big shift in the organization way. If before those were the public figures or political figures who were organizing the protests, calling on people to take to the streets, etc., these protests have not seen any leader, any vertical of organization. They are purely decentralized. People are just Georgian people themselves are the organizers. There are some Facebook groups that has been created throughout these days, basically helping each other to, for example, to bring some people from various regions to Tbilisi, because there were many Georgians who wanted to be present in Tbilisi protests, but they couldn't afford transportations, or they couldn't come to Tbilisi for various reasons. So we saw that there are like decentralized movements of Georgians all around the country, basically taking to the streets with the same aim to defend country's European future. So I would say that in terms of this, Georgian people are presented in a very resilient way. And it makes this protest very attractive and promising.
Let's turn to the propaganda side, because it'd be interesting to understand whether, I mean, clearly the Georgian Dream are already trying to label these protests as foreign funded. They're trying to put the label on them that this is, you know, a color revolution, etc. We know this kind of language from the propaganda we saw around Maidan and the subsequent processes that happened there. Do we see this propaganda coming primarily from within Georgia, or are we seeing traces already that troll farms, bot networks, etc. are being activated? I mean, to add to that, I saw an interesting article in a left-leaning journal which suggested to me that certain, you know, academic influence is being activated as well to paint these as Western-inspired, imperialist-inspired revolution as opposed to an organic process. So what have you seen so far, and how do you think this will play out?
Yeah, in our work, basically doing the research around social media, and primarily Facebook, because Facebook is number one social media in Georgia, used by many, many Georgians, we have seen how tens of thousands of dollars are spent on the Facebook posts or images, etc., to convince Georgian society that these are Western orchestrated demonstrations. And the posts are posted by government-affiliated Facebook groups and pages, as well as media outlets. But when we're talking about the influence operations, I would not distinguish between domestic and external, because they are pretty much mixed, because there are some actors who are directly affiliated with Russia, and then there are, I don't know, the government actors who are basically pushing the same narratives, as well as are part of the same operations. So I would say that the Russian effort to influence Georgian information space, it counts many, many years. In 2020 parliamentary elections, for example, Russian propaganda platforms Sputnik and News Front, they were directly engaged in a covert Facebook network, which was trying to target Georgia's pro-Western parties and popularize Georgian Dream. Of course, this is one of the direct signs of foreign interference. And in 2020, we also saw cyber attacks, which were trying to sow fear and chaos in the period leading up to elections. There were many cases, both covert and overt, where Russia tried to influence and interfere in Georgia's domestic affairs through information operations. And these efforts have been continuing till now, and pushing the narrative that the protests are not legitimate and they are all orchestrated by the West to overthrow the government is basically one of the leading things. We have saw, for example, how the Kremlin directly, the actors directly affiliated with the Kremlin are pushing this on Georgian Telegram. There are various Telegram channels created to only push the idea that if something goes wrong in October, and in going wrong, I mean, if Georgian Dream loses, this means that these people who we were telling you about, that they are Western-backed, they will be organizing violent overthrow. So basically, there has been much money put in this, and there are huge networks on both Facebook, Telegram, and as well as other platforms who are trying to create all this pretext for October election period.
This has a curious kind of echo, doesn't it, around the so-called 6th of January in Washington and labeling Biden's victory as stealing the vote, as illegitimate, as a false result. It seems to be a common tactic amongst aspiring authoritarians to cast doubt on democratic institutions, democratic process, and I would say create the ground for a constitutional coup. So, is this something that is in the minds of many of the protesters that if they don't protest now, the next election could be the last free and fair one? In fact, if the foreign agent law passes, then the next election may not even be free and fair.
Yeah, I would say that many people in Georgia do know how the similar process took place in Russia when in 2012 the mirroring law was introduced in Russia. And of course the wording and everything was similar to what we have right now. And then how in the following years, in 2013 and then 15, 17, etc., how the amendments were made to this law and how in addition to specific NGOs, media and individuals were targeted, and how this law was used to repress dissent in Russia. I think it happened yesterday or 2 days ago when another amendment went to this law, basically saying that the foreign agents will not be able to vote in Russian elections. So this is another level, basically edit and another layer added to the law. So many people in Georgia understand that this, if introduced, this law will be just the beginning. And the same that happened in Russia will be happening in Georgia. And this is what Zivanishvili said in his speech. So I think that given that there is a big understanding of this in Georgia, many more people are protesting and the protests are consistent. In Russia itself, in 90s, I guess nobody could have thought that this was last free and fair elections, because there is always this kind of illusion in many societies that this cannot happen here. And I guess that Georgians currently is trying to think about the fact that about the thing that no, this can happen here, because it happened in Russia, it happened in Belarus. There was an attempt of this to happen in Ukraine, and now we should act.
And let's dig into some of the mechanics, because this kind of constitutional coup doesn't happen just overnight. It requires investment in certain things, networks of influence. We saw in Ukraine, we see to an extent in Serbia, Hungary, and other places that actually oligarchic networks, networks of businessmen who are sort of coerced or funded from outside the country play a key role. You sometimes have mafia involved too, and I would say criminal networks. You have politicians and assets who are bought out. There are lots of different things that are put in place before what we're seeing now, which is the sort of it's the mushroom that pops up in seasonally, as you say. Summer is the mushroom season of illegal sort of sort of coups and attempts to take over the government. But underneath that, there's this huge kind of network, as a mushrooming network has, of threads and connections which would have been invested in. So, do we know much about how potentially Russia or forces aligned with Russia have been investing in Georgian society, politicians, administration, etc., to create the foundations for what we're seeing now?
During 2020 elections, there were a couple of reports showing that the Kremlin was directly financing various actors, both political parties and far-right groups. For example, one of the reports was produced by Estonian Intelligence Service, which basically mentioned one of the far-right pro-Russian groups as an umbrella organization of Russia in Georgia to conduct various Russian influence activities. Then there was another report by Dossier Center, an organization founded by Khodorkovsky, Mikhail Khodorkovsky, which basically provided some leaked documents showing how one of the pro-Russian political parties, Alliance of Patriots, was how their campaign was financed by Russia and how it was managed by the Kremlin, various Kremlin actors. The Georgian prosecutor's office, first of all, they didn't want to open the case to investigate, because even these kind of claims are very serious for Georgia, because the political parties cannot receive the outside fundings in the election cycle. And then when this topic was pushed by various organizations, the prosecutor's office opened the case, but we did not see any of the findings if these people were financed by Russia. Then there are many reports basically show, for example, by Transparency International Georgia, which are showing how Ivanishvili's close circle are becoming richer and richer day by day via corruption schemes, and how basically these people serve for this kleptocratic regime to maintain the power. So we have various reports showing that on the one hand, there is a big corruption network around Ivanishvili, and then there is Russian efforts to finance the Georgian actors. Also, many investigative journalists are saying that it is the cash that is flowing into Georgia, and that's why it's challenging to trace this cash. There were also many reports starting from 2022, which were claiming that Georgia is used by Russia as one of the countries to bypass the sanctions imposed by the West. We have all this network. And then last year, it was for the first time in Georgia's history, US introduced two separate sanctions on the Georgian actors. The first set was introduced against four Georgian judges who are part of the so-called Clan, who has captured the judiciary in Georgia and basically is controlling the whole judiciary system. They were sanctioned for significant, it's a quote from the US statement, for significant corruption in the Georgian judiciary system. And then there was another sanction set introduced against Otar Parshaladze, who is a very close associate of Bidzina Ivanishvili, and who was a prosecutor general a couple of years ago during Georgian Dream. And the reason of the sanctioning was that, according to the US, this person served and basically worked together with Russian intelligence service FSB, and he was basically their man in Georgia, who and the Parshaladze tried to sway Georgian people and the country in general towards Russia, and he acted as an influence agent of Russia in Georgia. So we have all these dots that are basically the connection of the dots is suggesting that there are many actors, both Georgian as well as Russia affiliated, that are working in Georgia together with Ivanishvili to maintain this power and to kind of direct the country towards Moscow's orbit. And of course, money is the main pillar that the kleptocratic regime in Moscow and in other countries stands on.
And of course, the interesting fact there is in Ukraine, you had obviously had a strong influence of oligarchs, especially in the media. And one of the features following the full-scale war is to prevent oligarchs from actually having controlling interests in any media organization, and the centralization of media under the state to try and push back against organized propaganda. So those are interesting trends there. But is this where Ukraine differs somewhat from Georgia? Because Ivanishvili is he owns a huge portion actually of the economy, and What you don't have is a set of competing oligarchic interests fighting it out amongst themselves. Is this perhaps in some ways more challenging? And does this mean, because he's got so much at stake and so much influence on the Georgian economy, that actually this could be incredibly disruptive, whichever way this struggle goes?
Definitely. I mean, eventually, he's the richest person in Georgia, who officially holding 7 billions made in Russia, but of course, unofficially, according to various reports, we're talking about tens of billion dollars, in various actives. So I don't think that there is another person in Georgia or around Georgia who would own the same amount of money and assets and who could influence the Georgian politics. I mean, using the money and other assets. So yeah, definitely this makes situation challenging. And this was one of the arguments throughout these years of some political figures in Georgia that how we can beat his assets, how we can beat the most influential and most the richest person in Georgia. But I would say that what has changed during the last couple of days, or what has become evident, is that the majority of Georgians standing together in the street appears to be the medicine, the bittersweet medicine to this problem. I would say that there are really good chances that this medicine will be an answer to this existing problem.
And where do you see this going? Because Russia is in, I would say, we call it existential, because no one's going to invade Russia. But essentially, the future of the Putin regime is put at risk through, its exhausting war in Ukraine, the fact that it hasn't made major progress there. The regime isn't about to topple, but of course it's under more pressure than it's ever been before. If that wasn't the case, would you fear a Russian incursion into Georgia to suppress the situation? Because Russia is low on hardware, low on potentially, trained bodies to perform a kind of 2008 style invasion. Do you think it's unlikely that Russia will try to intervene directly and will carry on, working through its proxies? Might it also inject, thugs, OMON, propagandists, which it did when it seemed that Lukashenko was about to lose his fight in Belarus? And that, of course, unfortunately, turned the tide back towards authoritarianism.
I would say that there was no time in Georgia's modern history where there was no risk related to Russia, particularly escalating in a kinetic way. As many people know, Russia is still occupying 20% territory of Georgia, basically having two Russia-occupied regions, Abkhazia and South Ossetia, where, of course, there is no delimited any kind of so-called border, and this is open where the kidnappings of people still continue. I mean, in a physical space, there is a creeping occupation, meaning that the FSB so-called border guards are moving fences into the territory controlled by the central government of Georgia almost daily. As I mentioned, they are kidnapping people from there. There are many escalations happening on the so-called borders. So this threat, not to even mention the threats in the online space, starting from cyber attacks and all these online influence operations, they are already there. If, for example, the news coming out of Georgia do not reach international society, it doesn't mean that these are not happening. We're talking about very large number of imprisonments of Georgian citizens by the FSB border guards for nothing on the very illegal ground. So these are already happening. And I think that Georgian people do know that Russia remains the number one national security threat to the country, and that this threat will be there. it will always be there. And I again, what has changed is that there is a really big will to resist to this threat.
So in conclusion, I mean, things are changing very rapidly. Do you remain optimistic that the people, as it were, the majority of people will prevail in Georgia? Or is it difficult at this point to know how events are going to unfold?
I remain optimistic because again these protests are unprecedented at an unprecedented level. We have never seen this many people in the streets, and we have never seen the protests continuing for this long. And also there is another factor, so-called Generation Z, basically the young people. Who historically had this attitude that we're not interested in politics and basically we don't count on us, to say it very roughly. But now we are seeing that these protests are driven by Gen Z, and they are the ones who are standing in the first line, facing the law enforcement agents, officers, and telling them that it's not the way to do good for your country. And these are the people who are saying that we are not going to back and we will be defending Georgia at any cost. So given all these factors together, I would say that there are many signs to remain optimistic for, and we'll be seeing it in a very nearest future.
Well, we'll continue to cover this story on the channel in detail. As you say, it's not necessarily getting the coverage I think it deserves in mainstream media. There's a lot of stuff going on, and we see important stuff in Ukraine, unfortunately, dropping out of the main media narratives as well. So it's important to get voices like yours on the ground, well-informed voices who understand the mechanics of politics and civil society. So, Ita, thank you so much for coming on the channel, and do stay in touch. We'll continue to sort of post details as they happen. I'll also put links to your social media platforms, Twitter, X, as it were, etc., so people can stay up to date with what's happening if they want to. But thank you so much.
Thank you so much for covering Georgia at this very crucial times.